Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
It was pretty funny, though, but that sums up the Maple Leaf season right there.
It's been awful.
That expression.
Dr. Hockey.
Welcome to the Dr. Hockey Podcast. I'm Dr. Jay Calvert, here again with Firefox Jason Berkley, looking very dapper, looking well-versed in the movie that we are going to talk about today, which we love.
Firefox?
No, we're not talking about Firefox. We are here with Josh Reel.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Who did not direct Firefox.
No, he did not. I think Clint Eastwood did himself, actually.
I think he did. Yeah. Josh, have you seen Firefox?
I have not.
Oh,
come on.
How dare you? You heathen. Heathen.
No, definitely not. But we are here to talk about The Russian Five, which is a soon-to-be, with fingers crossed and praying hands emoji, Oscar-nominated documentary.
About that would be something, huh?
That would be amazing, right? Definitely knock on wood. And
I've been thinking about this. If you get up there and give your acceptance speech, mm-hmm. when you win,
yeah,
do we get a mention?
Depends on how quickly they cut me off.
Oh no, you got to keep right going. Go right through it, like on one of the debates. Just got to keep playing right through the music.
So That's right. The question is whether or not the orchestra is over top of the mention. So
keep going. Just keep going through it, man.
Well, we are big supporters, yes, as you know. Steve Bannatyne is also here today, who Doc Emmerich mentioned on our last podcast. I don't know if he's going to chime in or not, but he's supervising, which is very important. Also a key portion of the movie.
Yeah, Steve likes to just be quiet in the back.
That's all right. Well, we want to talk about the film a little bit more since and if you haven't listened to the podcast with Josh Reel from
May.
It was from May, right?
I think so.
Yeah, because we were there for the Q&A when it was in Beverly Hills. So definitely go back and listen to that podcast. You can also listen to, we had Dan Milstein talking about it at the red carpet at the NHL Awards. He was also bringing it up since he was one of the executive producers on the film as well, correct?
That's right, yeah. He was the executive producer.
He's it.
Yeah.
He put up the bucks and got this thing over the line for you.
All of it, yeah.
Well, there you go. So we've got a big thanks to Dan Milstein. He's got to be happy with Kucherov's performance this year. He's really on fire, which is great. So those Russian players don't disappoint, do they?
No, not lately.
No, not lately. They've been awesome. Dan's a big agent for a lot of the Russian players, and he's a great guy. We had a great time chatting with him. Mm-hmm. So we want to talk to you, Josh, about where the film has gone since we had you through Beverly Hills. It's been all over the country. For those of you who haven't seen the film, how can our viewers viewers and listeners see the movie, The Russian Five? What's the easiest way right now?
Probably iTunes right now. It's on any streaming platform. But yeah, iTunes, Amazon.
It's available
Prime.
For $75 or?
What is it now? $9.99? Do you know?
$4.99.
There you go. Nice. It's a rental. But if you want to buy it, what does it cost?
Oh, $14.99.
Steve Bannatyne right there. See, I knew you were going to say something. He's the guy. He came in for the money part. He's like, listen, you got to buy this thing.
But it's worth it to buy it. I mean, you're not going to watch this just once.
No, you're not.
Well, you should rent it, and then if you like it, go to the website and buy the DVD.
There you go. We have the DVDs right here. Fresh off the presses. This is awesome. You know, I think this film really is about the Cold War. And it's about hockey, and it's about the human spirit. It is such a multi-dimensional film. I mean, and you got it all into this story about these, five players that were literally like hoisted out of Russia to play for the Red Wings.
Yeah,
it's a crazy story. Like, it's true espionage. It's true, like, sneaking down the back staircase,
literally,
and there's a limousine outside,
bags of money, and we're
taking this dude who's going to score some goals for our team.
A lot of goals,
lot of goals. I mean, crazy.
Yeah,
I mean, really, it's a mind-blowing story.
That's what I love about documentary is that like the truth is stranger than fiction, especially in this specific story. Like, you cannot write it. Like, it,
no
literally,
chance.
If you were to write it as a Hollywood screenplay, they'd laugh you out of town and be like, this is unbelievable. Bring us a comic book movie, but this, no.
It's true.
Yeah.
I mean, just how each one of these individual players, how they wound up making it to Detroit, it is a mind-blowing story. It is unbelievable. But it's really what happened.
It's exactly what happened. I mean, and it's, you know, we were fortunate enough that pretty much everyone who was involved agreed to participate and sit down with me and interview. And, you know, we have all these first-person perspectives in the film that, you know, so whether it's Sergei or Kazi or Steve Yzerman or even Scotty Bowman, you know, like everyone, this was such an important part of their careers and their lives that they just jumped at the opportunity to participate.
The film is The Russian Five. You got to see it. I got to tell you, it is like every time I've watched it too, there's more. There's more that you see that, you know, especially I got to say, like McCarty stories are just, they are
great.
Money.
Yeah. D-Mac is awesome. He's the best.
He is money in this film.
He's so good.
Well, now, Josh, was there anyone that you wanted to get on there but couldn't? Or that wasn't able to scheduling wise.
There was one scheduling wise, which just bums me out to this day. It was Doug Brown. He was sort of the sixth Beatle, if you will.
Right.
And so, yeah, you know, we were planning to kind of trying to do him last, and then just we came up against deadlines, and you know, all right, let's just finish the thing. And so him, I wanted Patrick Waugh, and we actually, you know, at one point the Avs when he was coaching them. We're like, okay, yeah, you know, we'll schedule it. And then they're like, oh, well, we got in late last night. We can't do it. We'll do it in the off season. And then they fired him after the season.
Right.
So we lost our, like, link to it, which in hindsight, probably the Avs were just BSing us because they didn't want to help us.
Yeah, do you think he'd really come on and kind of open up about, like, one of the, like, lowest points of his career, I think?
Well, I think he'd come on and he'd talk. And then if I brought up the Montreal game, he'd probably get really angry and do something with something that, you know, classic Patrick Waugh.
He has a bit of a temper, you know that.
Yeah, no, and that's what I was looking for, is sort of that energy.
100%. You know? That's it.
Right. Like, I kind of wanted him to, you know.
Like, I could see him pulling, like, a Chris Farley when he was in that skit with the coffee.
Right.
You know, and he said, this is not real Colombian coffee. And he says, what? And then he goes crazy in the restaurant, throws people around, and that I could see him doing that sometimes. So, you know, it's maybe it's fortuitous you didn't.
Yeah. Well, you know, either way. We didn't get it. And
yeah. No, it was perfect anyway. I just, it was one of those things I was wondering. Like, I wonder if there's anyone else you asked about.
Oh, yeah.
That,
so. It, you know, you try to get everyone that you can. And it's, you know, we wanted Mr. Ilitch. And unfortunately, he passed away while we were making the film. And and so, you know, we wanted Marion Ilitch. And, like, I guess the request didn't get to her. And she doesn't really do interviews anyway. So that was unfortunate. But, you know, I'm not going to complain about who we didn't get in the film because, like, we have Wayne Gretzky. You know,
you
and I got 25 minutes with Wayne Gretzky
and
after his insane adventure to Toronto. We got Fedorov. We got Papa Bear. We got Igor Larionov. Brendan Shanahan's in it, and he's fantastic. Like, McCarty. It's a who's who of that Red Wings era.
Sure.
And, you know, they're all giving you the honest truth, and it was pretty cool to do.
The thing that kind of blew me away about this, you know, whole story is that these – young guys, they're, you know, essentially, you know, very young, you know, kids at that point. I mean, they're literally jumping ship from Russia to play hockey in the United States.
Yeah.
Like, it's incredible that they even, like, went for that. Like, you know, if somebody called me and be like, hey, we'd like you to come plastic surgery and Russia with us. What do you say? I'd be like, no. Like, are you crazy? Like, why would I? Well, we pay you lots of money. There'll be lots of people for you to operate.
I'm going to have to call you Pavel from now on, by the way, with that accent.
Exactly. Thank you. Yeah. But I wouldn't go. I'd be like, no, I'm not, you know, quitting the U.S. to go to Russia. These people left their country, their families. Mm-hmm. They left everything.
But wait a minute, though. What if Russia was the pinnacle of plastic surgery? And everybody was aspiring to go to Russia to do plastic surgery. And they gave you an offer and said, here's a bag of money. You come with us right now. And you're in. And you can thrive and flourish and do whatever you want in the plastic surgery world. And you will make a ton of money. I mean, that's kind of what happened.
And also, you have to add in the layer that in this scenario, the United States is falling apart. Right? So you're leaving
a
country that's dissolving. Also, you're not really free to do plastic surgery like you want to. You have to do plastic surgery for the Army 11 months out of the year.
Right.
and you get to go home and see your wife and kids, you know, 6 weeks of the year. And like, that was the life that these guys were living. And so, you know, for Sergey, it was a no-brainer, right? He wanted to go to America. He wanted the American lifestyle. He wanted to, that's part of it. But really for him and all these guys, it was, I want to compete at the highest level of my profession.
That was the driver.
Right. And it was the NHL. And, you know, Sergey loved the American lifestyle and all that. He became quickly acclimated. For Vladimir Konstantinov, I think it was a lot of, what can coming to America provide for my daughter? What kind of future? Because, again, when he came in 1991, like, the Soviet Union had dissolved. Like, it was the Russian Federation, and all these satellite states were now rising, and the country that they grew up in no longer existed. And the structures that they grew up in and were operating in no longer existed, and they didn't know if they would continue to exist. You know, who knew how much longer hockey even mattered in Russia in 1991? And so, you know, to me, I think that's part of how this film gets kind of outside of the scope of just hockey is, yeah, there's this geopolitical element kind of in the back burner of it, that you have to realize that these guys were leaving at a really specific point in time, the end of the Cold War, and coming here for the, you know, the American dream. And for the most part, they achieved it.
Yeah, no, they definitely did. They did it like in spades, yeah. You know, for the most part. What is the trajectory of this film now? I mean, obviously, anybody who's a hockey fan has watched this film. That is for sure.
Well, I hope so. And then we need to get all the hockey fans to see it. And then we need to get all the hockey fans to tell their non-hockey fan friends that this movie's more than just hockey.
It is.
And then we need to get those people to watch it. And then, like, I mean, that's how you mount a underdog Oscar campaign in this sense. Like, we don't have the power, we don't have the money to compete with Netflix or Amazon Studios or any of the big studios. We just don't. So the only chance that we have is word of mouth. It's you know, building that buzz that people are saying, hey, this is a really great movie. And it transcends sports. It transcends doc even, hopefully. You know, it's just hopefully an entertaining 100 minutes. And that's really what it comes down to.
And it did air right after Rivalry. Yeah. The night that we were recording with Doc Emmerich.
Two weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. He was talking about it because he was really excited about this film being on NBC Sports Network.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it did well. I mean, did you get the numbers? Did you get all the...
I know we were in the top 150 of all cable programs the day that it aired.
There you go.
Seeing as though we had an 11 p.m. start time,
yeah.
That's not bad. We'll take it, you know.
Absolutely.
And, you know, hopefully... I know NBC is going to air it again.
Oh, they are?
Multiple times and leading up through the playoffs. So hopefully just the word of mouth builds and builds and builds. And by the time, you know, unfortunately, that might be the only way that the Red Wings are playing during the Stanley Cup playoffs this year.
We're going to talk about that in a second. We've got issues in Detroit.
Yeah. Stevie's going to do fine. But, you know, this is, yeah, we have issues.
It's just a polite way of putting it. But, yes, no, it's going to take some time. And that's why I'm not down on this team at all. It's just, we'll get into it more, but yes, there are issues.
There are issues. Yeah. That is the kindest way. I'm sitting here with two Detroit Red Wing fans, and I don't want them to one, leap up in revolt and beat my head in between my shoulders. But I also don't want you guys to, you know, wind up in a ball on the floor crying over your team, because it could happen.
Well,
it is worth it at this point.
That's already happened about 20 times this year, so it's
been awful to watch.
Look, as a Detroit sports fans, we got to get lower to be in a ball in the corner.
Although it is a real dark time for us in Detroit these days.
We don't have any team to cheer us up. Usually, like, one of the teams is
Michigan
doing
State
okay.
Basketball. That's potentially.
Yeah, Michigan
but
State
maybe.
Basketball. There you go. Good job.
I'm trying. Trying here.
Jason comes through with a big one.
Yeah. Work with me here. You know?
Yeah.
Bueller, anyone?
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's a rough time for us.
Well, Timu Solani did tell a story about Stevie Yzerman when he was here a couple weeks ago. Did you see this podcast?
I didn't see that part. I watched part or listened to part of it on the flight out here.
We were talking about the respect among players is kind of gone at this point, because they don't know each other all, and they're from different countries and different, you know, backgrounds. And so, unlike when he was playing, he said at one point, you know, they were kind of beating up on Solani, and Ty Domi went over to Stevie Y and said, listen, if anything happens to Solani, I'm going to beat the heck out of you. And, you know, it wasn't Stevie Y that was obviously Slash and Solani, but he said that time is kind of gone. And I was like, I don't think he knew how big of a fan Jason was, but he seemed to bring up a lot of Red Wings references when he was on, which was
There was a lot of battles between Winnipeg and Detroit and
big time.
Before Winnipeg moved to Phoenix, and Timu was a big part of that team.
So. I was too nervous to actually call him out on it, so.
Well, he was, I mean, definitely Solani has, he's got huge records, and, you know, the guy was like, he's a phenomenon, but he was talking about that he sort of was jealous of the guys playing today because they don't get, you know, hauled down and hooked and grabbed and you know, restrained essentially as he was.
But they're also not protected like he was in that sense as
that
well.
Is true.
So, yeah, you might be able to skate more freely, but an elbow to the head is a lot more likely to kind of, you're going to get a couple game suspension from the
NHL.
Open ice
hits,
But, yeah, you know, you don't have someone on the team like a Darren McCarty or a Bob Probert who you know that.
Probie.
You know, forget the NHL discipline committee. You know, back in the day, the discipline committee was the enforcer.
That's
right. And the discipline was doled out immediately if you crossed the line. And that's, you know, why guys had longer careers.
By the way, I got to say also, I mean, D-Mac, aside from being a really nice, sweet guy.
Yeah.
Okay, because we hung out with him when I was in Detroit.
We were in Detroit. Yeah,
great time. He's such a, you know, wonderful guy. But, I mean, that dude's big.
Yeah.
And he had big hands. And he was probably a lot,
balls.
I'm assuming, a lot bigger when he was playing.
Yeah.
I can't imagine going up against him in any physical way like that. Yeah. I mean, that just must have been, you know.
And he considered himself sort of a middleweight.
That's what I'm saying. Know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he
like,
did.
So,
so
you're not talking about the Proberts or the Stu Grimsons. Those guys were massive, you know. So, yeah.
Grimson was 6'6".
Yeah.
I mean, he's, I don't know if he still is that tall, but I mean, you know, we tend to lose an inch or so in height as we get older. But Stu Grimson was gigantic. And I remember, you know, he when he would stand up to, you know, dole out the punishment, it was somebody was leaving in a very, very bad, hurt way.
Yeah, so you watched how you played. You watched what you did with your stick. You watched how you hit someone in the corner.
You had no choice.
Right.
You had to.
You knew that you're going to have to face that guy if you cross the line. And, you know, that hockey's such a fast game, right? And that's the beauty of it is the speed and everything's moving. But at that speed, if you're not being cautious or careful, or that's not the right word, but aware, I guess, is the right word.
Right.
Then that's how injuries happen. And, you know, some it seems like maybe these guys, this generation isn't playing with that awareness, you know. And I think a large part of that is the fact that they don't have to face the consequences of that. So I'm 100% behind the enforcer and fighting in hockey. I mean, you know, I think it's a thing that, yeah, people say, oh, it's barbaric, but no, you know, they're not fighting just to fight, you know. It's not like, hey, I'm bored, you want to go. No, it's like fighting had a place in hockey, and it was when someone crossed the line, this is the thing we're going to do.
Yeah, I mean, it still does have a place. I mean, I think the fights are a little bit more, they're
yeah, but they don't
brief.
Want to do it anymore because, as Doc was saying, the instigator rule.
Right.
That's the biggest thing.
You don't want to put your team in a disadvantage.
Yeah,
that's right,
you're really doing that. And it's not something that I think is, you know, wise for the league to keep because it does keep some people in check.
Mm.
And if you looked at the way that the Russian Five played, what was the one thing they said in the movie? The best way to not get hit is not let them hit you.
Yeah.
You know, and they were able to keep the puck away from everybody. Able to skate away from people. They didn't get into that. That wasn't their game. They weren't the dump and chase type of thing.
No, right. Their game was a much more precision puck movement.
And so that's not,
that wasn't part
of their game. So when they got hit, like when Fedorov got really plastered in the wall,
right.
They weren't used to this. You know, that was the thing.
Yeah.
You know, and that was one of the things I loved about the documentary was kind of getting into their heads and seeing what their thoughts were when they came over here and how the game was for them and how they had to kind of change their game a little bit. But then when they came together,
they got to play their old game again.
That was their old game.
You know, as Slava said, and we cut the quote just for timing, but he's like, it's like a fish back into the water.
Yeah.
You know, once they got to play together. And it really was, you know. And when you watch those shifts, it's just magic.
Yeah, the game against Calgary, the first shift they played together in the game, 8 shots on goal the whole game for Calgary.
Yeah, you know,
I mean, that's
one of the most
8 shots.
I know. It's unbelievable.
Mickey Redmond still talks about that during games.
Oh, Chris Osgood says, you know, it's the easiest shutout he ever had in his career.
Yeah, I think Ozzie took his, you know, his mask off at a point and was kind of laying there against the goalpost, you know, just
it was super, you know, although it's harder because then in some way, because then your focus isn't on, because you're not facing a whole bunch of shots.
As the netminder. Yeah.
When you only get 8 shots a goal, like, what are you doing in the rest of your time?
So just for our listeners, a lot of them who haven't seen the film and didn't get to the pleasure of watching these guys play, the Russians really back in the day would play a game of keep away.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, they would rather move the puck around between themselves than give it up. If they couldn't make a clean entrance into the zone, they just bring it back. And they start again, and they would not give up the puck.
I think Larionov said, he goes, why would we want to give up the puck? We got it. We had to fight to get it. We worked so hard
to get the puck. Yeah. Why do I want to give it to you?
Right.
You know.
And that's the truth. And I don't see why other teams aren't more interested in playing that way. Because if you look at it, like, why do you want to just dump the puck in, and now it's a 50-50 puck?
Right.
I'll tell you why, I think. Because, A, people aren't accustomed to that system. And B, these guys, that's all they knew.
Right.
They didn't know the dump and chase and this and that. That was all they knew. So I agree with you.
But a skilled team, let's look at some of the teams right now that would benefit from a non-dump and chase game.
Toronto
would right. They have super high-level skill. Toronto needs something.
Yeah.
They need to reevaluate everything at this point. But, like, why would a team like that not adopt the concept of hold the puck and we'll carry it in when we're ready?
So here's two things. First off, in order for this system to work, you need defensemen who can move the puck exceptionally well. So Slava Fetisov was one of the greatest ever, you know, when he was in his prime at moving the puck.
For sure.
And Vladdy was no slouch. But like you said, it's these guys that you, when you grow up in the system, when you play that way all the time, that becomes your nature. And so kids are not raised in a hockey system in America or Canada or even Russia anymore that teaches that from youth, right? It's a totally different system now. And so the creativity, the idea that, you know, and this is something Igor is a huge proponent of, is like bringing creativity back to the game, allowing just the ability to just play out on the ice and kind of find that. And it's now so structured and, you know, the drills are all about this and this and make sure the passes are this and that. And rather than like, okay, go out there and just make a masterpiece, you know? And it sounds silly to say, but that's what the Russian Five were able to do because of the system they grew up in and played in. I think those two things are a big deal. Like, who does Toronto have that can move the puck from the D on that level, right?
Well, and that's Toronto's biggest problem. They have Jake Muzzin, who I think is an all-star defenseman. I mean, really, he's incredible. But they don't have the blue line support still that we've been talking about since we started the Dr. Hockey podcast. And that is where, you know, I think if they're going to – I'm no GM for Toronto, but if I were them, I would be looking at moving some of their offensive firepower that isn't getting it done to get, you know, get a Cam Fowler or get somebody like that that probably could be available for
them. Scoring 8 goals a night and beating people, you know, 8-4, fine. Mm-hmm. But it's not happening.
No, right. The other night, I think Pittsburgh has like 6 goals on them.
Yeah, 6-1. That was the whole thing. Did you see that clip with the guy?
Which?
There was a guy and his girlfriend sitting there with a Maple Leafs hat on. And she was taking a selfie of them. And they had it on Hockey Night in Canada. They focused on them. And once she was taking the picture, the guy was like putting on a fake smile. And as soon as the picture was done, he kind of went back to the scowl on his face. Yeah, here it is right here.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And it was pretty funny because it's like he's like, I think it was because he was looking at the scoreboard. I think it was in Pittsburgh, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's what it was, 6-1 or something.
You know, Crosby's out. Yeah. And, you know,
it was pretty funny, though, but that sums up the Maple Leaf season right there.
It's been awful.
That expression.
You got to remember, I mean, there's not a lot of guys in the league, period, though, that can play defense like that and make those passes.
That's right.
And so those guys are at a premium. I mean, if you look at our Red Wings, we have not been the same since the retirement of Nick Lidstrom.
Of course.
Because, like, when we lost our quarterback back there, you know, you have trouble, and we have not been able to find those replacements yet. Looks like we got a couple guys, maybe.
Hronek, Cholowski, they're coming on.
Hronek looks amazing.
I know.
Like, he's growing so well.
Didn't he get injured, though, I think? It was.
I didn't see
that. I have to double check that, but yeah.
Cholowski looks good.
Yeah.
And, you know, from what I'm reading, Moritz Seider is looking great in Grand Rapids. So, you know, when Stevie made that pick, everyone was like, I was at the draft party, actually, with Darren, and the crowd was just like, "Huh? Okay, you know, because we're going to trust Stevie."
But it was a
head scratcher at the moment. But
whatever Steve says, I believe him. I mean, if he knows...
he made the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Look what he made with Tampa Bay. Right. He knows what he's doing, and I think anyone to question him on his first draft, I think, is just like, really?
No, I think Steve Yzerman knows exactly what he's doing.
That's why I kind of hit the autopilot with him and just kind of sit back and just enjoy the ride.
That's a good idea.
2 or 3 years.
Not only does he know what he's doing, though, but he knows what's at stake in Detroit.
Of course.
He knows the history of the franchise. He lived through it. He was the captain of its resurgency out of the Dead Wings. He knows what this team means to the city. And so he knows what that responsibility is to bring a winner back.
And people were talking at the time about trading him.
Yeah.
Back in those days.
Yeah, there's a story, actually.
Steve Yzerman?
Yeah.
Scotty Bowman came to town. His first season, Steve Yzerman was hurt. Okay. And I think it was the lockout shortened season the next season.
Oh, yeah. 05. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
There was rumors that Scotty Bowman was going to trade Steve Yzerman.
Earlier than that. Yeah.
And the rumor was like to Ottawa for maybe it was Jason Spezza or something like that.
Something like that.
But the opening night, I guess the story that I heard was the eruption that the crowd, because everyone in Detroit heard the rumors, right? When they announced Steve Yzerman was just deafening. And when they announced Scotty Bowman, the boos were so loud that the story I heard was after the game, Mike Gillich came down to Scotty Bowman and said, you can do, you know, you have the GM power. You can do anything except for trade Steve Yzerman. He's not going anywhere.
Wow.
And, you know, fortunately there for us, Steve bought into Scotty's system. Right, he bought into the 200-foot game. He understood that if he wanted to hoist a cup instead of a goal-scoring trophy, he was going to have to pay a little more attention to the other side of the rink. And he bought into it. And then, you know, a couple of years later, he's finally a champion. So,
well, I mean, there's so much history with Detroit. I mean, it's just this film really. Just to get back to the Russian Five, I really want everybody to make sure you see it again.
The Russian5.com. Everything's there.
Russian5.com.
You can buy a DVD. You can buy a T-shirt. You can find a stream. Yeah.
We definitely need T-shirts.
We'll send
you some.
That's
for sure. No, we'll send you
some. We should have
I got
some.
You the Dr. Hockey.
I know.
Where's your hat, dude? So drhockeyshop.com for the
It is nice discussing something about the Russians and not about our president right now. This is a nice refreshing change.
What does our president have to do with the Dr. Hockey?
No, I'm saying because you know
he's
the whole
not
thing
allowed
with the Russians.
No,
I'm saying just now. Never mind.
No, I got you. Well, this is an amazing film, and
thank you.
I think you did a great job.
Well, I can't take all the credit. I mean, I was able to assemble an incredible team around me, and you know, from the producers to the editor to our assistant.
What did everybody do? What did Steve do? Did he do anything? He's sitting over there. He's awfully quiet.
That was his role.
Did he help?
You know? Yeah, of course he helped. Otherwise, why would he be here?
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe he's just driving you around town.
You needed a ride, didn't you?
Yeah.
No, but I mean, you know, ironically, that is part of the help that, you know, Steve and I lived together for 5 months in Austin, Texas while we finished the film. So, you know, that alone, I think he deserves some credit for.
It would be hard.
I will jump in on that. It was hard after, you know, married man for 15 years to go back to living with it was like college again.
Yeah.
Well, that also could be fun.
It was all right.
No, not really, though. Steve's like, it wasn't. It wasn't fun at all. But I mean, you had Jenny.
Jenny.
Who's
incredible.
Yeah, she put a lot of time into this as well. And who else were your key people?
Well, Dan Milstein, of course. You know,
he's
the executive producer. Without that, you know, it doesn't happen.
What was the budget on the film?
Oh.
$17 million.
I wish.
You say it like this with your pinky in your mouth? Right.
$1 million.
I feel like it looks like $17 million, and we did it for
did, but it looks more than that.
I mean, the animation alone was just so top-notch.
Oh, that was done by Ukrainians. Actually, that was an international thing where a storyboard artist who's also from Port Huron, the small town that Steve and I grew up in, he lives out here in LA now. So David Knott, incredible artist, him and I would talk through the process and he would draw these storyboards. And we took these storyboards and we sent them to these artists in Ukraine. And I sent them photo references and they drew all these, the pictures, everything that's hand-drawn or just art-drawn, they did in the Ukraine. And then they sent that back. We had an animator in Austin, and so she started compositing the layers.
Wow.
And so it was just this really tricky, crazy, you know, workflow. But everyone pulled together, and it turned out the way it did because, you know, that's what happens when everyone sort of pulls in the same direction.
Well, it's unbelievable.
Another interesting story about David Knott. He's also from Port Huron.
That's, yeah.
And we played hockey together, Pee-wees.
I didn't realize you guys played hockey together. Nice.
And Doc Emmerich's first broadcasting was for the Port Huron Flags.
Nice. Yeah.
That's right.
Port Huron.
It all comes together. That's right. And he knew your dad, right? Is that the...
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, Doc was really fired up for you and for this film. And obviously, you guys have all... You had a great team. You put all the pieces together, and there it is. And now it's, you know, staring at the... you're staring at the Oscars.
Let's hope. I mean, we're the, you know, it's...
It deserves an Oscar.
Thank you.
For sure.
I told you, you can borrow my tux, but I'd prefer you go show up in a Lloyd Christmas tuxedo. From Dumb and Dumber?
Yeah.
The orange one?
The orange one.
That would be with the top
hat. The powder blue's good, too.
Powder blue would be good, too. Either one would be perfect.
Well, we should make a Dumb and Dumber joke reference thing with it because of Jeff, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
That's absolutely true.
We actually, there's that joke in the film, actually, when Jeff is in the locker room and Slava Fetisov shows up, and he's like, "You're an actor, right? I saw you drive the little motorcycle."
Right, right.
And when we cut out, just to get out of the scene, was Jeff... making fun of himself is like, yeah, that was my Oscar picture. But yeah,
that's right.
We have Jeff Daniels in the film.
Yeah, absolutely.
I forget about that sometimes because he
doesn't play hockey.
Harry Dunn. Yeah. That's that was his name.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, Jeff Daniels is in the Russian Five.
This is the voice of the fan. He was a fan. Like, he was a real season ticket holder. We didn't just say, oh, who's the most famous Michigander actor? Let's put him in. Like, he was there. And then when I found the footage in the archives of him, I was like, oh yeah.
Yeah,
definitely
sure.
Have to get him.
That's a great choice.
Yeah.
And he's a huge fan.
Yeah. He's just like pure Michigan. You know, he's everything about our state he loves, and he's just a big supporter. And like, you know, we have to stick together. Our state has been through a lot of stuff.
But honestly, I think you find that, and that's one of the things that I think it's unique to Detroiters and Michiganders, is when you talk to someone who's from our area, mm-hmm. our state, and then whether they've lived in California, Wisconsin, wherever they go, they, number one, always consider themselves an actual Michigander still.
Yep.
You don't say former Detroiter necessarily. You always say yourself, you're still a Detroiter. Mm-hmm. And there's always a common bond. And when you find someone and you talk to them, you instantly connect. There's not this type of like standoffish. You can always tell if someone's from Detroit or from Michigan because they're going to initiate a conversation and be a nice person. That's just the way it is. And I think you're right. We do kind of, you know, come together on a lot of things. We've been through a lot in that state and that city. And I still read the Detroit News. I still read the Detroit Free Press. I mean, that's my source for news.
Yeah.
You know, and watch every Wings game, watch all every Lions game, much to my dismay. Right. you know.
How do you watch the Lions games? Because that's hard.
With a bottle of Jack and a...
It is really hard.
Well, I can't do it anymore.
Let's put it this way: at this point now, if they make a good play, I won't even look. I'll say, okay, it's coming back. It's holding number 74, 10-yard penalty, replay first down every time.
Detroit's got its issues, but it doesn't have the issues with the Russian Five.
It's okay though, you know, because again, this season, and I said this going into the season, is Stevie's real evaluation, right?
Of course,
he's figuring out who on this roster is worth keeping around.
Yep.
And Scotty Bowman went through it. And, like, if you look at, like, in the archival footage in the Russian Five from the 94-95 seasons, right? 93, 94, 95. You see jersey names that by the time they won the cup were gone. Fan favorites, like Dino Cicerelli.
Martin LaPointe.
Martin LaPointe was there when they won the cup.
Was it
97.
97, right.
Right. But, so, Keith Primo, though.
Right. Primo was the one big one. Right.
Right. So Keith Primo was a big name. Number
big
one
guy.
Pick, right?
Yep.
Big dude. Scotty Bowman realized.
Went to Philly, I think.
You're right. Yeah. And Scotty was, And Scotty was like, he's not gelling with what we need, so he shipped him out. Right? And that's what Stevie's going to do. He's going to figure out.
Wasn't it the Hartford trade with Shanahan? Or was that?
Yeah, you're right.
He eventually played in Philly.
Yeah.
That's two.
Recent guest on the Dr. Hockey podcast, Stu Grimson.
Eventually, Primo ended up on Philly.
Yeah, you're
that's right.
Right.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah, that right. was a very big trade, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that was
huge.
That brought Brendan Shanahan.
And that
was all she wrote. That was a big one.
As Darren said in an outtake in the interview, like, getting Shanahan was like the last piece that they needed to know that they could not just win on this, like the scoreboard, but also if they had to fight. Like Shani had some toughness, and like you see it in the big, you know, climactic brawl scene of the film where when Darren's going at Claude Lemieux, Shani comes to his defense in that Matrix moment with Patrick Waugh.
Right.
And, you know, they became brothers. They,
gotta
they
see
would
the
fight
film.
For each other.
That was a great scene. You got to see
it. Oh, that scene was so fun to cut.
You got to see it. You got to see this film. Too fun. So what's next? How do you progress from today?
Yeah.
December 10th is the big day, right? Is that what you're saying?
That's
coming up.
Coming up, yeah.
So how? What do we do? Do we have to go over? Is there like an Oscar headquarters we can pick it, or do we have to like you know throw things, or like is there like a Academy member we can kidnap and say you're voting for this thing? What do we do?
I am not advocating for that. But
no, but we'll do. I'm from Jersey, dude. Yeah. We can do these things. Like,
you
what know, do you need?
Where we are now, I mean, we've
you
been
know
doing
some people. Is that what you're saying?
I know. Hey, I know people back in the home country, all right?
Well, home country.
Oh, wait, that's still the United States. Right. Got it. All right, just checking.
So we're doing a series of four-year consideration screenings, and we're trying to you know, hopefully get Academy members out to see it, or at least if you know maybe one or two will come out and see it, and they'll tell everyone else, hey, I saw this movie. It's really good.
It's got to be in.
Right, you know, and word of mouth is so key at this point. Again, like, we do not have the budget to compete with the Nat Geos and the Netflix and all these big studios. We are an underdog. We are a small film. We don't have a studio behind us. You know, we self-distributed our theatrical, you know, run.
You did a great job with it, though. I mean,
Steve and Jenny, they were on the phones.
It.
They were hustling all these theaters, telling them, you got to put this in the theater. And fortunately, a lot of them said, okay. And then...
Well, you know what helped is the theaters in Michigan couldn't wait to have it.
Yeah.
And then
definitely.
They all booked it. And then after the first weekend, our numbers were pretty good. You know, and we could call up other theaters in Pittsburgh and Denver and say, hey, you know, we grossed this amount of money on our first weekend. And they're like, oh, well, we'll book it too.
Well, yeah. We better have that film.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
So
yeah.
It was the Michigan plan that...
We started at home, you know, and even from the film festival thing, you know, like... We chose the Detroit Free Press Film Festival because it was the home festival, and we had this insane, amazing premiere that even Sundance or Toronto, I mean, shit, even Cannes could not have given us that type of love where, you know, 2,000 diehard Red Wings fans, people who bought those tickets right away when they went on sale. Like, we sold out. This is a true story. The day that we went on sale for our premiere, Radiohead tickets went on sale. Right. Now, Radiohead's playing at Little Caesars, so it's a much bigger venue. But our film, well, my friends are like, dude, I didn't get tickets. It sold out before I could. I'm like, well, that's fine, because I just got Radiohead tickets 15 minutes into the sale, you know. I'm already okay. But we sold out that fast.
Wow.
Like, the demand was that. And then...
And they were scalping tickets.
Someone was trying to scalp tickets for, like, what was it, $250 the week of? I don't know if they sold them for that, but, like, that was what the StubHub market said it was worth.
Wow.
Yeah. And
for
so
a documentary. That's
right.
Crazy.
A Red Wings documentary, you know, made by a first time filmmaker with Jenny. This is her first feature as a producer, as a lead producer. We just pulled together and made it happen. Vladdy was there. Darren was there. Jimmy D was there.
Crazy.
It was just great to share that night with, especially Jimmy D, who, you know, he just recently had an operation. He's on the mend. We're thinking of him.
It was a heart surgery, wasn't it?
He had a non-cancerous tumor.
Right, that's right.
Removed. And I got to see him the week before at Vladdy's Hall of Fame induction. And he was just still, you know, oh, hi, Joshua. How are you? Good to see you. It's good to see you, Jimmy. And, you know, but yeah. And from there, you know, then we went to Seattle. Then we went to Traverse. Like, but we started home.
So you got the numbers, and then it's easy to convince people, like, hey, people want to see this film.
Yeah, and, you know, fortunately, a lot of places took a chance on it. And, like, the markets that we put a lot of energy and did media and podcast, almost all of those got held over for another weekend. You know, but unfortunately for us, again, we are a small – basically, it was a team of three. Like, Jenny and Steve were booking it, and then I was making the social media stuff. And then if we got an interview request, one of us would take it. And so, you know, Jenny and I would take it, you know, so like one weekend we opened in like 12 or 13 cities and we were expecting a certain media bump that just it didn't happen because that's just the nature of media.
Yep.
But the two cities that Steve got an interview that I did in Pittsburgh, and I did a podcast in Nashville, those two cities on that weekend were held over, which means that when people hear about the movie and they actually watch it, they say, I'm going to go spend my $15 and go out and watch this. It moves them in a way where they tell their friends, and then the word of mouth, more people come out. And so this is what we need for the, you know, to make this Oscar shortlist is word of mouth, people to give it a chance and then to like it and then to tell someone else, hey, you need to see this movie. That's literally the only way we're going to have a chance.
I really am. I'm going to give everything we've got from our standpoint. As you know, we've been big supporters.
We appreciate the love so much.
We definitely want to see big things for you. I do want to shift gears though, because we're running out of time, and I want to go over a little bit about what's going on in the league now, other than the Red Wings.
Yeah.
From your standpoint.
Wait, there's something else besides the Red Wings?
There is. I'm going to enlighten you now.
I don't know what you're talking about. These words don't make sense to me.
Yeah, I'm rusty on all that other stuff.
Well, I'm going to help you.
All right.
I'm going to help you guys. What I need to know, I had an interesting conversation, and I don't know how up to date you are on the metro area in New York, because the Islanders, the Rangers, and the Devils are all having very different kinds of seasons right now. And I want to talk a little bit about a guy at the end of his career, because somebody asked me a question about Henrik Lundqvist, King Henrik, and said, what do you do with him now?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested in both of your opinions, especially because we're just talking about, you know, he's at a different point in his career. Would you at this point say to Sir Henrik, stay with the Rangers, go the distance with them, or this is your chance to contribute somewhere else and you might be able to get your name on the cup?
Well, am I the GM or am I his friend? Like, because there's two different approaches.
Friend.
Okay. If I'm his friend, I'm going to tell him, look, you have one more shot. Yes, it'd be great to play your entire career as a New York Ranger. And if you want to, that's admirable. There's a lot of guys. Steve Yzerman in Detroit, Nick Lidstrom, Henrik Zetterberg, Pavel Datsyuk, Nick Cronwell. Those guys all did it. It's a very rare thing to do now. But at the same time, like if you have one more shot and if your team can pick up an asset so that you can leave the Rangers your final season in a better place, maybe you go. You know, it depends on how the competitive juices are flowing in them. You know, if he's already kind of at that end where it's, you know, he still loves the game, but maybe he's not just still dying for that cup again, you know, that's one thing. And then you stick with the Rangers. But if you really, really want to hoist the cup, you want to help lead someone. And there's, you know, I obviously haven't been in the locker room, but it appears to me that a playoff run, there's nothing more fun and bonding than getting with a bunch of fellow teammates and going on that, you know, 2-month-long journey through the first round, the second round, the third round, the fourth round. And, you know, if you were to go to another team and do that, I guarantee you, you're going to be family with them as well. And so...
Correct. I am sure of that. It's got to be. Because to get through that, it is, you have to be on the same
page. You come as a stranger, but you will hopefully hoist the cup as family. Right. So,
well, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, it's one of those situations where if you ask any kid playing hockey, you know, and the kids that are really going to do something with their career, what's your ultimate goal? Want to win the cup. Want to win the cup. That's it. There's nothing else. Even the players from Russia, when they came over, never having been around the NHL, knew the significance of the Stanley Cup.
Right.
So I think that, you know, whatever he says in interviews, because a lot of these players aren't going to give their innermost thoughts, you're not going to get anything out of them. He wants to win a cup. He'd be a complete lunatic if he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was one of his friends, I'd say to him, listen, you've already made your mark in New York.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get your jersey hanging from the rafters, guaranteed. You're a Hall of Fame goalie, guaranteed. But the one thing that people talk about is, did they win a cup?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to be that guy in 5 or 10 years from now and say, oh, I wish I had done something. And so what you say, okay, like you said, and I think that was very, you know, a great statement. If you can leave the team that you've grown with in a better situation by leaving to go win a cup, because there's some good teams right now. I mean, look at Toronto, okay? They're having trouble in goaltending, even backup goaltending. They don't have anybody that can help out with
that.
Anderson.
Is correct.
There are other teams. Florida, Bobrovsky's not doing great this year. But there are other playoff teams that you go to that deadline, I guarantee you, if they said, okay, we'll give you a number one round, a first round pick for Lundqvist. I almost said Zetterberg for a second. I was thinking Henry. You give us a first round pick or a second round pick and a prospect for Lundqvist.
Or a conditional pick.
Conditional pick, whatever it is.
For sure.
If we get to the cup finals and it goes to a first round, whatever it is, they would do it in a heartbeat because the window for winning in this league is so narrow. If you get to that point, you can't say, well, we'll wait for 3 or 4 years and we'll see how they... No, you got to win now, and I think that there would be a huge market to do that. So I think he'd be a fool not to.
You know, I think of like, you know, when Ray Bourque went from Boston to Colorado. You know, now one thing, a lot of people are kind of sour about that. Oh, you just joined Colorado. With Henrik Lundqvist, though, if he were to go to a cup contender and be the goalie, you're carrying that team. You're not playing, you're not one of six D-men. You are the goalie. And like that could be a way where he could put an exclamation point on his legacy, right? Of saying, I did all this in New York. That legacy is unquestioned. And then I went to a new franchise and I led them to a Stanley Cup. And like that would be pretty special.
Go back and listen to our interview with Timo Solani.
Yeah.
I asked him that pointed question. I said,
yep,
you know, your name's on the cup. Do you ever wake up at 2 a.m. and I asked him, my name is on a Stanley Cup. And I asked him, what would you have felt if you didn't win? He said he would have been devastated. Mm-hmm. He never would have been able to live it down. Yep. And I think that that's that hunger that I guarantee that Lundqvist has. And, you know, he's not going to get it in New York.
Yeah.
And
unfortunately.
And again, this is not a knock on Dan Marino. If you want to use our football analogy again. But that's always been the asterisk next to his name. He didn't win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And he all those yards, everything else. And he's a phenomenal player. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But he didn't win the Super Bowl, and it's always been a bit of a, you know, question mark next to his name for whatever else. So it's, you know, I think if you have a chance, you do it. And
well, you know, Henrik definitely, in from my standpoint with this question, and that's why I asked you guys both that, there's the emotional answer, and then there's the data answer. And the data answer is you move. Mm. You get off of the Rangers as soon as possible because in his time, this is not a cup contender.
Right.
So he needs to look around and be really smart and look where his contribution could really make the difference to a cup contender.
Right.
And that is the hard pick because where does he go?
Right.
And I think, you know, if I were him, I'd be waiting till February to talk about that.
See who's in the best position and give your...
Absolutely.
I'm assuming he has no trade clause at his level. So then you submit your teams that you say, I'll go to these guys. And, you know, like as a fan... You know, the closest I can think of is when the Detroit Tigers traded Justin Verlander. And then he won a World Series.
Totally.
And there was something a little bittersweet, but I was so happy for him to get that. And I knew he wasn't going to get it.
Because we still consider him a Detroit Tiger.
Right.
He's still ours.
Right.
Yeah, that's how we look at it.
Right.
I mean, it's just how it is.
New York Rangers fans will feel the same way about Henrik Lundqvist.
They would never boo him.
No one will boo him if he goes to a team and hoists the cup with them. Like, they are going to love and respect him for what he did.
Unless they somehow get better and then the Rangers go into the cup finals.
And Lundqvist beats them.
Right.
Yeah, that could be a
little awkward.
Yeah, but.
That was Marian Hossa.
What are you going to say? Just kidding? You know,
with Chicago
and Detroit.
No. He was on Detroit.
Well, yeah.
He was on the Penguins. He said the year in 2008, 2009, he said, if I'm ever going to win a cup, I need to go to Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Detroit and then he watched just like, well, Jason left the building, but he watched the cup skated around.
Yeah.
I still see that last minute.
And, you know, that.
In my head.
But to Hossa's credit. To Hossa's credit, after that, he signed a 12-year deal with Chicago.
Yeah.
After he did that move, he said, you know what? I'm going to go someplace. And by the way, Chicago didn't even make the playoffs that year.
Yeah, but they were pretty set up to go.
He signed on. He saw Taze Kane and said, you know what?
I'm going to grow with these guys.
Jay doesn't miss a chance to rub that 2009 finals into my...
Need to rub it in
every time.
Almost every podcast, I try to bring it up.
Every single time.
If I can.
I had just moved to Austin, Texas.
Every single... If it's possible.
I was there.
I can do it.
I was right in front of that shot that Lindstrom took, and I know it haunts him. He's mentioned it. We're trying to get him on here, which I would love to, because he and I are going to have a moment there with that, but... That's a singular moment. We were up 3-2 in that series.
I'll have a moment with you on that. That'll be good. Yeah, I'll look forward to that.
Yeah, I'm going
to
yank your scrubs over your head. And I'm going to pound you.
You're going to hold me while Lindstrom takes some shots.
Nick, that probably will be known as the Red Wings' like worst meltdown in the modern Wings era, unfortunately.
Absolutely.
It was a sign of things to come
for the next
There was no reason for the Penguins to win that. There's a guy that still owes me $500 over that, by the way, too. They were down. The Penguins were down two games. The Wings won the first
three to two.
But they won the first two games.
Right.
And when the Penguins were down two losses, this guy said, there's no way the Penguins are winning the Stanley Cup. I said, I think they are. He goes, oh, really? You want to put your money where your mouth is? And I've never bet on hockey in my entire life except that one bet. Penguins won the Stanley Cup. He's never paid me that money. He said, well, when you come to New York, we'll go to a Ranger game. I've been to New York a lot of times. I haven't been to a Ranger game with him. But
well, the way they're playing, that's not worth $500.
Who?
The Rangers.
No, definitely not. There would have to be a dinner involved with that, a very expensive New York style steakhouse dinner.
And not just some soup in New York.
No, no, no. That's
doesn't count
sure.
as a meal.
No.
Sorry, Banya.
You know, though, I love going to Madison Square Garden. Have you ever gone to a game
there? I haven't.
It's really fun. It is, it's well worth it. The Ranger fans are completely insane. Even the fact that they're not doing great, they're always nuts for their team.
Yeah.
It is a really fun place to go. There's a lot of buildings that are fun to go to, and I'm sure that new Little Caesars ain't too shabby either.
It doesn't feel like home yet, but once the Wings start winning, I think it will.
It needs some soul.
Right. It's a great entertainment complex.
Great just building. But
building. The views are great. You know, there's the gondola up top, like when you're sitting with the media or the players.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's like a video game view. It's just kind of cool. And then, you know, you can go down and
see everything about the Joe had soul to it. Even
character.
Even when you went to the bathroom in the troughs, it was like, oh, I'm home. This is awful. I have stage fright, but this is home. Yeah. You know what I mean?
They had the troughs at the igloo, too, when I was in Pittsburgh.
Everything about it had such character. And like you were saying, because of how much we won and how much was behind it, and it was basically like the seventh man on the ice.
Yeah,
you know, that's kind of how it felt, and that's
the visitors' bench was just a little bit shorter,
right?
You know, and the boards were locker room was just a little nasty.
The boards were always so lively, and it was the same particle board that was from 1979 when they built the stadium until they tore it down.
Yeah.
So it's,
which the tear down was almost done.
Yeah.
I live in the neighborhood. Now because the weather's changed and I can't bike, but up until the weather changed, I would bike by the Joe every day and just see the building become a skeleton. And it's the, you know, the riverfront of Detroit is changing. The city of Detroit is changing. And like, that is one of those signs that like there is a new Detroit, for better or worse.
And I felt the same way when Tiger Stadium was torn down. It just broke my heart.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my entire childhood. We spent those two facilities. Well, not so much the Silver Dome, because that was kind of a dump.
Yeah.
But although they had great nachos. Best nachos in any sporting event ever were at the Silver Dome.
Jason talks about these nachos so very frequently.
Do you remember? What was it about them that day?
I don't know. It was that cheese sauce was just magical at the Silver Dome. I don't know. Although one of my friends.
This Ford Motor Oil.
If you can think about one. Okay, think about one arena or stadium in Detroit that you would not want to pass out on the ground.
Oh, it would, well. Stadium or arena?
My friend Alex actually got sick and basically passed out on the floor of the urinal in at the Silver Dome.
Okay, for arena, it would be the Silver Dome. If it's a club or anything, Harpo's.
Well,
down.
Yeah, I agree with you on both those. But still, it was it was just some of those places has such just character. I mean, and just it's...
Everybody has that attachment to those arenas, especially when you see them go, you miss them big time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you want to relive it, please check out The Russian Five.
Harpo's.
It is amazing. a great film.
Hayloft.
Hopefully. We are looking for an Oscar nomination.
Hopefully.
All the way through. Thanks, Josh.
Thank you, guys.
Josh Reel, again, for joining the Dr. Hockey podcast. Jason, any final comments?
You're getting a beating. I'm telling you that.
I'm ready for it. I am. I'm available. All right. Well, this is the Dr. Hockey podcast signing off with your prescription for the NHL.
Thanks for listening to Dr. Hockey. Check out new episodes every Thursday and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or at podcastone.com.